Welcome to the golf edition of Hooked on Sport. This is South Australia's summer golf wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define golf across South Australia and beyond. It's time to talk golf with sports commentator Ben Hook and state golf representative Sophie Hilditch.
Good on you, Wallace. Thank you. Well, Anthony Kim has completed a miracle at the Grange Golf Club in front of the most incredible South Australian sports crowd I have ever seen. He shot 9-under-63 to finish the tournament at 23-under. He started the day as a lovely little subplot. He was 5 back from the big boys, John Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau. 5 hours later, he's lived most significant story in its history. Sophie Hilditch, what a day.
Oh, it was such an exciting day. It was actually just an exciting 4 days of golf, to be honest. We spoke about it, Hooky, and LIV Golf, it's always been quite hard to like follow the leaderboard and follow what's going on. But I think LIV really upped their game for LIV Adelaide this year. I watched it both in person and I also watched it on the TV. The TV leaderboard was much better to follow. I loved every moment. The crowd was huge. I think we had 115,000, which is the most Australian golfers ever seen for a single tournament. It was unbelievable. We had young kids. We had older people. There's a lot of people there that I knew. There's a lot of people there that I didn't know. It was awesome. I loved it.
Saw quite a bit of it myself, Soph. To be honest, I've seen every bit of it from a mobile phone off of the TMNZ Plus website, which I've been madly streaming while over here in Wellington. For those who are regular listeners may have caught up with this, but I've been in Wellington largely for the Women's Amateur Asia Pacific Championship, which has just been won this afternoon by Yunseo Yang of Korea, first Korean ever to win it. She's won it in fine style. She's won it by 8 strokes, so shot 3-under today, and that is significant because the weather here in Wellington, we talk about windy Wellington. Well, it is not windy. It is absolutely blowing dogs off chains. It is severe gale force winds. The airport's been closed down. We're supposed to be flying to Queenstown tomorrow, and it looks for everything like we won't get out of here potentially, not even until Wednesday, which is quite the thing. So there you are back in Adelaide having 36 degrees in the most beautiful warm summer's weather, and it is completely turned here. Yunseo Yang to shoot 3-under in those conditions is incredible, as did Jazzy Roberts, who finished in a tie for third. The kid from Bendigo, the Australian, shot 2-under today to finish at 6-under. I'll just give you the Australian scores. Grace Rowe has finished at even par after shooting 3-over today. I guarantee you, Soph, 75 in the conditions that got dished up to the players at Royal Wellington today is extraordinary. Ella Scaisbrook, the Sydney sider, 20-year-old, finished in a tie for 26th. She shot 4-over today to finish at 7-over. And then Reagan Denton, our own South Australian, who had a tough time of it today, shot 7-over to finish at 9-over. She will be happy if I told her that the 12th hole was going to be dug up and blown up or whatever, because she tripled it yesterday. She doubled it today. She doubled it on day two. So that was just, you know how it's like that, isn't it, Soph? There's just one hole sometimes that completely catches you off guard. Shaila Singh finished at 10 over and in 33rd place. Reagan Denton was in a tie for 29th. And there was one Australian, Rachel Lee, who didn't make the cut for the weekend. So yeah, really good performance by Jazzy Roberts. Her and Reagan have sort of shared a lot of the spoils of the amateur tournaments over the last 6-8 weeks. Gee, they've had a really busy schedule. So hopefully Reagan gets a short break now and then can start to prepare herself for Augusta National, which gets underway in, 5 weeks' time?
Yeah, look, I don't think she's going to be having too much of a short of a break. I think she might be getting some professional starts, likely for the New South Wales Open and the Aussie Open. Yep. I think it's all guns ho for her. Amazing event. To have 5 out of the 6 Aussies make the cut is incredible. They're all incredible golfers. And I completely understand where Reagan is coming from. It's pretty hard to step on that tee block when you've already gone double, triple. It's pretty tough. And sometimes, but that's almost her entire score. So she's obviously played the rest of the course beautifully.
You're absolutely right. And I saw a bit of her. I got a little bit of vision. Saw her make a lovely birdie on 8 yesterday. Then she played the 9th hole really well, just left it an inch short of rolling it in. Yeah, a lot to be excited for with Reagan. I didn't see her after the round today. I was hoping to get out there, but just with the weather and everything, and I've got a 3-year-old in tow, it made it too hard. Yeah, I think she was philosophical, not too disappointed, knew it was very, very difficult conditions today, and she's got a lot to look forward to. But, Soph, let's turn our attention back to what is obviously the focus of the day, Liv and Anthony Kim, the winner. It is an incredible story. I think, you know, recency bias has had us, you know, completely blown away. It's one of the all-time great sports stories. I imagine it's going to find a settling place in a week or two about where we really see this. But let's just think about this. An American, which is going to be really important as Liv tries to cut through into the US market, an athlete that seemed lost, forgotten, had an injury, was out for 12 years on insurance payments. He received a handout from Liv to get free starts in the tournament 2 years ago. He didn't come close. He never looked like it. He looked a fish out of water. He was wearing these baggy clothes. His shirt was hanging out. And I almost sort of questioned how serious he was about this comeback. He gets a second year. He's marginally better, but that was in part because, let's be honest, the bottom end of the Liv field is pretty weak. He gets cut. He wins back through Liv Promotions event. So no handout here. He's done it the hard way. Patrick Reed departs and he's on the Four Aces team. He's dressed smart now, his shirt fits, and his second event in, he's a winner. And I just think about, I'll tell you what I think about, Soph. I think about Grayson Murray and the tragic ending to his life 2 years ago. And Anthony Kim could have been a very, very similar story. He has admitted that he struggled with thoughts of suicide. He struggled with severe addiction. He was using drugs while out on the golf course, playing in majors, you know. His life really spiraled for a long period of time. And so to come out the other end of that, to fight as hard as he has on Liv for 2 years, and now he's a winner and is going to be extraordinarily marketable and is going to, I suspect, start to command some special invites into some other big tournaments around the world. It is an incredible story and it'll find its place. Right now, I can't be anything but other than truly excited for him.
Yeah, I think it's a miraculous story. You're right. He's been pretty open about his troubles with addiction, and he definitely could have gone down a more horrendous and gruesome path, and he didn't. And he got that start back from Liv, and I completely agree with you. I remember seeing footage of Anthony Kim, and he did become a bit of the laughing stock. There's some sort of footage of him underneath a tree at Grange, and he flubs it, and he starts yelling at the crowd, and it was pretty messy and pretty grim. From all accounts, he's gone back and done a complete swing rebuild. And during that whole phase was actually working on his game, trying to get better. When you're working on your game, it's like 10 steps backwards before you even start to go forwards, even remotely. And I think maybe reflecting on it in hindsight, you look back and you think maybe all those, that anger and that stress was coming through was actually, I'm trying to do something here and it's not working out. It wasn't frustrations of, I don't care what's going on. It's actually the complete opposite. It's, I completely care and what I'm trying to do isn't working and I'm not getting the results and I'm not even getting a point in this Liv game. And like you said, it wasn't a strong field. So he's probably sitting back thinking, this field is weak and I still can't even get a point here and I'm doing all this work and it's not working out. Then to turn around and fight and make his way back in, I mean, you could see it. He was also, what, 30 metres shorter than Jon Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau off the tee. He was completely playing his own game. He was choosing to lay up on holes like 15 where those bunkers were completely in play, and he still chose to lay up, take the longer club in, play your own game. Don't get distracted as to what they are doing. They've obviously got more length than me off the tee, but they're going to play their game. I'm going to stick to my game. And you could see he was having conversations with his caddy, so you could tell there was a lot of work and a lot of mental strength going into, hang on a second, step back. Is this what we're doing? Is this the game plan? Is this what I want to do? But every single time he held a 15-footer, the fist pumps, the excitement, you could just see how much it meant to him. And I mean, I didn't start the day thinking that I was going to be rooting for Anthony Kim. By about the 11th hole, I was rooting for Anthony Kim, and I really wanted him to be the storyline, and I was excited every time he held a putt. And I was feeling, it's probably one of the first times that I've watched a Liv tournament and there was a storyline that I was interested in and following, and I could see the frustration of Jon Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau. Bryson couldn't get his driver going at all. Jon Rahm couldn't get his putter going. He also kept aiming left to try and get those cuts that he plays so beautifully and just hitting them straight left. And you could see they were getting frustrated, and I could see how frustrating that must be, looking at behind you and going, this guy's got 30 metres behind me. I hit it 30 metres past him and he's absolutely annihilating me on this golf course. He's shot 9 under. And like you said, it's perfect conditions in Adelaide, but it's still 9 under. It's still so impressive. And then to see him on the 18th tee and to watch his daughter, and his daughter's name's actually written on his putter and he's got the pink putter for it, to see the daughter run out and see the family run out, this one just meant something for Anthony Kim, and it was contagious. It meant something for the rest of the audience. I haven't seen a live audience apart from the time, and I mean, we haven't even spoken about it, but Ripper won the team event here. Yep. Apart from the playoff, when Ripper won the playoff, and that still felt a bit jovial of the audience and a bit more like they were heckling. I can't even remember what team they were playing, but they were heckling
Stinger
them.
Stinger GC.
And there was comments in the backswings and there's all that. This almost took a turn for Liv, and it was a respectful audience, and the clapping and the respect that was played to Anthony Kim was beautiful, and it's what I love to see, and Liv delivered it today.
I've always said the problem with Liv is that no one really cares who wins it. And we've seen guys who've won tournaments and they're already bathing in cash and they haven't won a trophy with any prestige at all. They've just won more cash. And you can either see, if it was Bryson in particular, it would sort of almost be this confected excitement that didn't really mean anything. But last week with Elvis Smiley and this week with Anthony Kim, we have seen wins that are truly life-changing for different reasons. Elvis Smiley, because it's made him a legitimate contender on the world stage. He obviously had his DP World Tour status that he gave up to go to Liv. He is going to be a world-class player as a result of that win, because it got him the rankings points that's pushed him inside the top 100 and has him in and around the mark for major championships. Anthony Kim's a long way from there. I think he was ranked 800 and something in the world, OWGR, coming to this event. He's probably going to move up somewhere between 550 and 650, I suspect. That win means so much to him, and you can just see how emotional he was, how much it meant to him, and have his family there, and the family hug, as Sarah, Molly and I would call it, that they had on that 18th green there, was something really special. And whether that can cut through, Soph, I think is the next big question for Liv, but they have the blank canvas to work with now with these guys who are winning events, and it means so much more to them than just the cash.
Well, we can talk about and make conjectures as much as we like, Hookie, about what Anthony Kim was thinking, but how about we turn straight to his presser now and see what he had to say after the win?
I felt like I didn't putt well the first 3 days, but when I started seeing the lines on the green, I just said, give yourself as many chances as possible, you win this thing. And obviously, you know, Bryson and John didn't have their best today, but regardless, I putted great. My caddy and I worked so well out there. I heard my wife shouting even when it was going bananas out there. So all those little things, including, I don't want to forget, the support I've had from the crowd here in Australia has been second to none. I'm very overwhelmed with this feeling right now. My plan is to keep getting better and start winning some more trophies. You know, golf is very important to me. It's obviously my focus right now. But at the same time, I want to do what's best for my family. I want to take my time and enjoy these moments. That's why I was out there on the green with my daughter and my wife, because I didn't do this by myself. There's people very important in my life that have helped me get here and have supported me without wanting anything in return. So this is for all of them. I want to enjoy the moment, but also I'll be back on the grind soon.
I had an interest in going out and watching Elvis Smiley throughout the week, and I loved it. I mean, he followed it up with a good turnout. I can't remember where he finished on the leaderboard now at the top of my head, maybe like T26, T20-something around that area. You can correct me here, Ben, if I'm completely wrong, because I know you were watching from the phone very closely.
Yeah, you were spot on, so T27. So watched a fair bit of his round today. Putter went dead cold and inconsistent. If you just look at his scorecard alone, shot 69, which doesn't sound terrible. The back nine, so from 10 through 18, he only parred two holes, and he had four birdies, three bogeys. I mean, that's just sort of a bit unlike him, you know. He's a more consistent player than that. Yeah, he'll be disappointed with the day, but at the same time, T27 bringing up the rear of a group of guys who've gone, what, T14 or T6? T8, I think it might have been. So an incredible day for them. And, yeah, their second win in 3 years here at Adelaide, which it's great that they've been able to make this a bit of a home course advantage for them.
Yeah, of course. And look, I'm talking about Elvis, jumping straight back to him. This would have been the biggest crowd he's ever played in. Elvis has been plastered everywhere. Like, you were obviously watching some incredible women's amateur golf, but if you actually came to the LIV tournament, I almost got a shock at how much promotion they had for Ripper GC that actually had Elvis front and center. And they're really pushing Elvis and really push. And with a name like Elvis, actually, you don't really need to do much of that pushing. People can catch on to Elvis pretty quickly. But that must have been terrifying for him. Like, I know he's a professional golfer, but he wouldn't have had that level of people screaming out Elvis, the music, the vibe. His first win, the audience was nowhere near like this. So I was actually, I know what you're saying, his final round, it was a roller coaster looking at it. I think in the end, there was only about six or seven pars all in total. It was just birdies and bogeys. But I still think his composure was pretty incredible. And I think the T27 as a backup playing in front of 115,000 people who are all screaming your name, I really enjoyed when he got to the watering hole, he's throwing his hands up and trying to get involved in it as much as possible, which again is something that Elvis hasn't experienced before. He's come off the back of playing European Tour and the Australasian PGA, which obviously the audience is completely different and you don't have that vibe and it's dead silent when you hit the ball. So I'm still thoroughly impressed. I'm keen to see what he does next. It's clear that Ripper GC are leaning in and wanting to promote him, and so are LIV. I think they're going to lean into him as being, like you said, potentially the next prodigy and the one that the PGA, I mean, they're not going to get nervous over him because he's only one player, but it's someone that I think they would have liked to have had on the back burner because he is an incredible player and he's up for the task.
Yeah, and I think the point we made last week is that there's going to be a lot of those guys outside of the PGA Tour not getting starts on the PGA Tour. Maybe they're Korn Ferry or maybe they're DP World, and they're going to look at Elvis and what he's done and say, maybe this is a viable alternative to my career. Just one thing, you talked about the promotion of him and how he's suddenly become this incredible star. It was a bit thick, wasn't it? I mean, I did see the Premier, Peter Malinauskas, who normally the BS radar is up with him. Normally he's pretty good. But suddenly he was having a conversation with Elvis and was talking about, oh, you know, I'm a bit embarrassed. I'm all hot and flustered. I'm a bit of a fanboy. I hope my fanboy isn't showing. I mean, come on, Premier. That is a little bit unbecoming. You couldn't have spelled that bloke's name correctly 10 days ago and all of a sudden, you know, he's your all-time great hero. There are some things that were going on with this that was a little bit much for me. But I tell you what, the point I do want to make, and I reckon this is probably pertinent, we were talking last week about Dimi Papadatos, who finished second, or maybe it was third, at the WebEx Sydney event. Dimi Papadatos is someone who has been a really strong contender on the Australasian Tour and other tours for many, many years. And I was just looking at how his career of, say, 13 years ago coincides with what Elvis Smiley's career looks like now. Dimi Papadatos turned professional in 2012. In 2014, he won the New Zealand PGA. In 2017, he lost the Australian Open to Abraham Anser. So he was up and around that sort of echelon. Those performances got him into a start in the Open Championship in 2019, missed the cut, but it didn't give him the exemption onto the DP World Tour. He then got onto the Korn Ferry Tour in 2023 and 2024. I was having a look at his stats. In the first year, he didn't do too bad, won about 180,000. He lost a tournament in Chile in a playoff, but then in his second year of 17 events he played, he only made two cuts, lost his card, came back home, struggled away on the Australasian PGA Tour. And that is the cautionary tale. Or let's say player X got the offer of going to LIV and knocked it back, as distinct from what Elvis Smiley did. It can be a pretty tough road out there. And the fact that Elvis Smiley has decided to take this opportunity, yes, there was always a risk that he was going to miss out on majors, but it was an enormous amount of cash up front. It's an enormous amount of cash that he gets to play for. Imagine if he got injured in 2 years. Imagine if he lost his form. Imagine if he never did quite enough to cut it at DP World Tour and make a good enough living or even make it onto the PGA Tour. That's what I reckon Elvis would have been wrestling with. And someone like Dimi Papadatos, who's been such a good player for so long, but just never quite broke through, is probably the cautionary opposite tale. And it sort of suggests to me that, yeah, I was interested when he took it on because I thought Elvis is the sort of player who's good enough to make it regardless. But you never really know. There are so many good players who never quite make it. And the fact that he got offered this opportunity, it's no real surprise when I think about it that he took it. It was probably a bit of a no-brainer to take it. To be able to play for that much money, to go ahead and win one of these tournaments, as we talked about, that is life-changing for him. It's impossible. And look, this is easy for me to say in hindsight. It's impossible for me to be thinking about, well, you know, what's his alternative? He's struggling around in the Middle East, maybe trying to scrape together enough money to pay for it, plus a bit of, you know, pocket money on the side. He then goes into some difficult tournaments in Spain and Portugal and these sorts of places where they can be very difficult golf courses. Here he is, he's with a bunch of his good mates playing in front of these adoring crowds. Now, he's not going to have adoring crowds going forward, but he's still going to have the opportunity to play for life-changing money, to get little snippets of points here and there, potentially get him up into the world top 50, and you get into a whole host of other events from there. So it's always was one of those things that I wrestled with, but when I think about it now, I say, my goodness, if you look at the other road, the other harder road that may not have had the happy ending, it's very, very difficult to say anything other than what a wise, sensible decision he's made and how quickly he's made that pay off.
Well, it's an interesting comment you made. I actually spent a fair bit of time on Saturday with a friend of mine who I played a lot of amateur golf, and she's turned professional probably for the last 4 to 5 years. And she's an incredible golfer, and I think she's going to go on to do incredible things. But she was just talking to me about the grind of being out and playing professional golf. And she'll actually be someone I'd be interested in talking to later on down the track, because we had that conversation that we've been having about the WebEx series and what that means for the women playing and that kind of likes. But she raised the point. She was like, if there was LIV for women, I would jump on it straight away if I had been given the opportunity, because she was like, the grind is just, it's so hard. There's not that much money up for grabs. You know, it's one part here or there. It's literally a couple of inches. You miss cut, you don't make any money. You're on to the next tournament, trying to find and source the money to be able to go there. You've got a caddy, got to pay them. There's so many expenditures, and it's literally, you've just got to get on a heater. And you don't know when that heater is going to come. It could come in the off season. You have no golf to play, or it could come during the season, but you don't really have as much control as you would like to have. Also, you can get on a heater at the same time as another player gets on a heater and still not win, because, you know, they just have a little bit of luck go their way. They just play that slightly 1% better. And that's all it is golf is just 1% at a time. It's infuriating. So it's funny that you raise that point, because speaking to her about it, and look, I honestly, she's a beautiful player. When I used to play with her, I loved it. She's got a great head on her. I think she's going to do brilliant things. And I won't name her because she'll probably hate me for saying this, but I think she's going to go a long way. But it is a harder route. It is a harder route than what Elvis chose to do. And I agree with her. I think if you were given that opportunity, particularly at the start of your career, it's really hard to turn down. And he's just made life-changing money that actually, if he wants to go down another path, he has the money and the backing to support him now. And he has experience too. Not many people get experience playing in front of those crowds like he did. And let's be real, it still means a lot to him, but it's not as much. He was making money regardless of where he fell today. And so there's not that much pressure as much of PGA. If I miss cut, I'm coming out with $0. In fact, I'm coming out negative dollars.
I don't know if you can hear in the background. I almost think I'm on the first floor of the Intercontinental Hotel. I've taken over the Central Coast Mariners women's soccer team's breakfast room by the looks of things. But it's almost rattling in here. I feel like I'm in the absolute bowels of the hotel, but things are rattling around, making all sorts of noise. So if you're getting anything in the background, I apologise.
No, you're absolutely fine. We can't hear that you're knocking on death's door at the moment from the sounds of things. I'm a bit terrified for you. But at the same time, don't worry, Hooky. I've got this. If I need to finish the podcast by myself and those walls come crumbling down, it's okay.
I've got white knuckles. I'm hanging on to things so that I don't get blown away myself here. A couple of things I need to raise, Soph.
Always. A couple of things. Really? Only a couple?
Needless to say, when I am in another country, I spend a fair bit of time on the app.
Oh, yeah.
The app does give you a broadcast, but can you believe you cannot watch it full screen? You can only watch it vertically on your phone.
Oh, no.
And it comes a band across the top. If you flip it sideways, you lose half the picture. Couldn't believe that. Another issue with the app, I checked the scores last night. So I hadn't seen the end of Live yesterday. I'd been at the Asia Pacific and I thought, I'll just check where the scores are at. It had finished. It had only been finished about an hour and a half. And already it's telling me the round four scores. So this is 18 hours out from the start of round four, or about 20 hours out from the start of round four. And I'm getting the round four scores, which is everyone at even, would you believe? Because no one had actually fired a shot and was still 20 hours away. So I don't understand that. So does the scoreboard boy on the Live app knock off at 6 p.m. every night and doesn't turn up again until midday on Sunday? I thought that was a weird thing. And then the other thing that frustrated me a little bit, because I like to just follow, you know, stats and stroke averages and hole scoring averages and those sorts of things. On the app, they have a section called stats and it's faded out and it says coming soon. Now, come on, guys. You've been around 4 years. Could you actually just start to work out that giving us a few stats, if you're an elite level golfing organization, coming up with the stats wouldn't be that difficult, I wouldn't thought. And then I got a bit frustrated with the coverage as well. There's a few quirky things going on. I'm watching TVNZ and the first thing they do is Arlo White throws down to the on-course coverage, which is Henny Zuhl and David Ferrady. So there's the beautiful graphic, Henny Zuhl, David Ferrady. But Henny Zuhl is there with Nicholas Kolsarts. I mean, it's the opening thing in, this is day two, it's the opening thing that you're about to show us and you can't even get the supers right of your broadcast stars. So that was a bit weird. The leaderboard is odd. Do you find the leaderboard on the TV easy to read? You would have seen it on the full screen TV today. Like I said, I'm only watching it on my mobile phone, so it probably made it a bit more challenging. But I thought the leaderboard was really awkward.
Look, I thought it was better than what it's been in past years. I will say that. But I get what you're saying. I think it's quite complicated. I think we're going to talk about the Rippers a little bit more because I found myself rooting again for the team Ripper coming up against, Legion 13? Yeah. John Rahm's team and Tyrrell Hatton's team. I always find it a bit like they're kind of a rock and a hard place though in terms of they have to tell you what hole they're on, but then
but they
also...
Don't.
Yes.
This is my great frustration.
Oh, see, they did on the TV.
How many holes are all they say is how many holes are remaining.
Did you put your glasses on, Hookie?
No, I'm telling you what I'm looking at. The big number there is holes remaining. It'll say 12 or 11 or 6 holes remaining. And then they'll often slide down and you'll see the player
it's the slide
and they go
down
to a larger text box.
Yeah.
And they'll tell you in very small print what hole they're on. But I just find that difficult not to be able to go to the player and instinctively see, well, this guy's on 6 or 8. And now I've played Grange a fair bit, so I can work a lot of them out. I find that extraordinarily frustrating. The other thing is...
I agree, but does that not make us a bit niche in terms of, I mean, most people watching this won't have played Grange and that won't mean anything to them.
Like, telling us what hole they're playing, therefore, is fairly important.
Yes, but they don't... Like, I 100% get what you're saying and I actually get frustrated with myself. I get frustrated with this as well because even following the team scores, I was being like, oh, well, Cam Smith and Lucas Herbert still have 18. And I was like, one of them's not going to bogey that, or if they do, the other's going to birdie. So I was like, they've got this in the bag as John Rahm is teeing up on 18. So I know it does matter and it does make a difference. When I'm watching Live Golf in another country, I'm probably not looking up every single golf hole. And so the hole itself that they're on doesn't really mean anything to me because I don't know whether or not it's a hard hole or an easy hole or what it is. But I get what you're saying, but all I'm trying to say is it means something to us because we know Grange, but I think a lot of people don't know Grange like we know Grange.
Yeah, fair enough. No, that's I'm not going to argue with you on that point. The other thing I just thought as well is the team symbols are all in the green colour rather than the maroon of Ripper or the pink of the Range Goats. And so I find these symbols without the actual team name almost unrecognizable. So that was a little bit frustrating. The other thing they do that annoys me is, let's say it's Anthony Kim having a putt and it's all about Anthony Kim. But if it's Mark Leishman having a putt. It's all about the Ripper and the team leaderboard. And I find that hilarious because there were some pro-LIV people who were absolutely adamant that when the Women's and the Men's Australian Open ran simultaneously, it was a ridiculous event because you couldn't follow two tournaments at once. Yet here we are essentially trying to follow two tournaments at once. And I do find it weird that we sort of go from the team leaderboard to the individual leaderboard. And I lose, if Leishman, for example, is having a putt, I don't know where he is in the field because we're too busy focusing in on where the team leaderboard is. So I do think there are still some issues that I'd like to see them work out. What did you make of the course?
I thought the course looked great. I thought it looked awesome. Props to Grange. We often speak about this, but setting up a course for a tournament and specifically setting up a course for a tournament that's going to have 115,000 people on it.
Yep.
It's a tough task. That's hard. So I think generally the course looked great. It was really easy as a spectator to walk around. You could get to the holes really early, easily. Signage was awesome. I know that's not what you're asking me. You're asking me about how well the course was manicured, but I still think from a spectator, that makes watching a tournament great. If you can get to places where you need to go really quickly and it's easy like that, I think that's brilliant. The Eastern Brown Snake slithering around was a bit scary, but that's okay. We're disturbing him, so that's fine. The greens probably weren't as spicy as I thought they were going to be.
Could have been, yep.
I thought they were going to be a little bit more peppery. In fact, they have been more peppery in the past. So I thought that was a bit disappointing. I thought we could have set the course up slightly harder for them than what it was, particularly when, 18, they're just driving the green. So if you can make that green a bit firmer and a bit harder, those chip shots automatically become tougher. You're going to see a bit more creativity. At the same time, it's exciting seeing birdies. So softening up those greens does have a place still. I think all in all, I was impressed with Grange. I think it looked great. I think, like we said, these players just hit the ball so far. It was always going to be hard for them not to tear it up, particularly the John Rahms, the Bryson DeChambeaus. The Anthony Kim, I probably didn't have on my draw card, but he did tear it up, and he's a smaller hitter. It was always going to be a tough task. I think they did a good job of what they have. I think Grange looked beautiful. I think Grange members should be extremely proud of how they set the course up. Bunkering was marvelous. The fairways looked great on TV. Yep. Fairways looked smooth, as in fact we played there recently and it was gorgeous. So I think Grange members should really be proud of how it presented. I think the greens were soft for a reason. They wanted birdies, and it's probably not the golf that I'm a sicko. I like to see them struggle, so I probably would have liked to see more struggle. For what LIV is, I think that's what they needed to do, and therefore I think in the end Grange presented beautifully.
Rowan Damon, all his staff, incredible performance, not a blade of grass out of place. I would not question the conditioning or the setup from that perspective whatsoever. Here's something I'd ask you. It's a 7,000-yard golf course. They move a tee or two up here and there. Certainly, the par threes get moved up a little bit. Is that a par 72 golf course? I'm not convinced it is. I actually wonder whether one of those par fives is actually a par four. I'd probably choose.
I think those par fives are quite weak in terms of all of them can reach them in two pretty comfortably.
Stroke average was around 4.5 for all of them.
Yeah, I think not. 9 is one of my favourite ones because I think it's so challenging off the tee, even for them, even for the big hitters. It narrows out so quickly. So I loved watching 9.
You mean 18 East?
Yeah. 18 East. Which played a 9 on the composite.
I'd take that out, quite frankly.
Would you? Oh, see, I love it.
So I was having a think about this. I think 10 East is a terrible starting hole. I don't think it's a bad hole, but I do think it's a problem where you can just fire it out onto 9 East and get a really good angle in. I was having a think about this. I'll give you my routing.
Yep,
hit me. 8 East, 7 East, 12 East, 13 East, 14 East, 15 East, 16 East, 17 East, 9 East. There's my routing off the east and then go and play the back nine of the west. The other thing I'd do, so if I'd work out one of those par fives, so they're all 4.5s, okay? And I love a 4.5. I think that's a great thing to have. But it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be a par five. I think you could have moved one of those up half a tee block or a tee block and made it as a really long, difficult par four that played as a stroke average of 4.2, 4.3. And I think that's just as interesting to make it a really tough par as it is to see a pretty straightforward birdie, because we saw probably a few too many straightforward birdies. I look at the bottom end of the field. T53 finished even par. Quite frankly, you can't finish T53 in this tournament and be so well rewarded with a score of even par. You haven't played that well. So I would like to see them work their way towards, I mean, look, it's irrelevant now because it's the end of Grange as the host of Live, but there was probably one or two things in there that I would have preferred to see to make it a bit more of a good, fun, difficult, tough contest that befits elite golf. The other thing I'd say as well about the par fives, we saw two albatrosses in this tournament. I mean, they are very, very rare. It demonstrates they're probably tough, long par fours rather than genuine par fives.
What did you make of the Ripper team win? Were you following that as much as you were following the individual score?
Oh, absolutely. And I was paying very close attention to what John Rahm was doing because I knew that, first of all, and we made the point at the top that it was a nice subplot for Anthony Kim to be sort of in that final group, but I didn't expect him to be doing any more. And when Bryson just blew himself up in the opening six or seven holes, he was just not on the golf course. And then John Rahm started to wobble a bit as well. And I was really just thinking about, well, Rahm probably wins this from here. He was four up with about 11 to play. And you don't expect someone of his caliber to blow it up like that. But I was certainly keeping an eye on the fact that the four Ripper boys were all sort of ganging up on Rahm, who was single-handedly, along with Tyrrell Hatton, I agree, trying to sort of fly the flag for Legion 13. And I'm in two minds about the team aspect of it. Firstly, no one bets on it, which is probably a pretty good sign that no one's really that interested in it.
Mm.
Having said that, you really feel like the Ripper guys in particular are a genuine team.
Yep.
I mean, I don't get a feeling that that's the same for, you know, the cliques or, I mean, the four aces seem to be pretty pleased with Anthony Kim, but in part that's probably because he's won them a few extra bucks himself by bumping them up the team leaderboard. I don't know if the team aspect works when it's a straight out stroke event.
I have a question for you. Do you think that the players themselves are at all interested or looking at the leaderboard to see where their team is? Because I reckon the Ripper boys are. I don't know why. Yep. I say that. Just watching Elvis Smiley when he was putting on his finishing hole, which was, like you said, either the fourth or the fifth hole, he had a putt for birdie, and at that point, Legion 13 might have only been one shot or two shot behind. His reaction for someone who, I mean, he might have jumped up the leaderboard one spot, it wasn't massive, was a bit more than just that. It looked like he was thinking, okay, my team's coming for another win back to back. I don't know. I think they are, but for everyone else, like, I don't think John Rahm at all gave any two hoots where Legion 13 were on the leaderboard.
Do you think Dustin Johnson cares where anyone else is in the four races? I mean, you imagine you're the manager or the captain of a franchise team like the four aces, and you get told you've got an opportunity to recruit Anthony Kim. How do you reckon Dustin Johnson would have been like that? that's fine. Whoever else it is, doesn't matter. Just stick someone in a shirt. That'll be fine. And I do think it means a bit more for the Ripper guys because they grow up playing. And you, Sophie, you play it. I mean, the match play, interclub, pennant golf that all of those guys would have grown up cutting their teeth on as young kids coming through with their local club. You know what it's like. You're constantly walking up one fairway and one of your teammates is walking down the other and you're giving a finger up or down as to what the score is. And I think they've got a little bit of that mentality as well. So I think it does rub off a little bit. I do think that adds to the challenge of the OWGR points that, I mean, let's say, for example, that Lucas Herbert is sitting 15th in a tournament and he knows that he needs to two-putt to ensure that Ripper wins the team event. But in an individual event, he's trying to make that putt. In the team event, which he's playing concurrently, he's just trying to make sure he lags it in there and two-putts it. So there are some challenges with it. And I think I've always said to you, Soph, that I would love to see Liv lean far heavily into a match play format. And we saw, you know, we would see of their 14 events, see 7 or 8 of them as outright match play. I think that would be a real point of difference to what we're seeing on the PGA Tour. As I've said to a couple of times, Liv is a little bit PGA Tour light at the moment. There are some things that I think they can do with their teams that would be creative and I think would give them more relevance over and above what Ripper has done, which is, you know, really established themselves as a genuine team. I think that's something that they need to work out a way of establishing that right through the entire field.
Yeah, I agree. I reckon a second event in Australia that is all based on the teams would be awesome, and everyone would get around the Ripper boys, particularly because they have that team camaraderie that we've seen. It was awesome to see another Ripper GC win. Let's hear about their win.
I remember watching the 2024 playoff and I'm like, gosh, I want to be part of this team. I genuinely did because, you know, a few years ago when I was professional golfer and playing on tours around the world, it was quite individual and isolated and you were traveling by yourself. But to be able to achieve what we did today as a group, as a collective, it's such a better feeling than when you win individually.
If you're coming down the stretch individually and you got a chance to win, you're going to have a few people in the crowd, I would say maybe 50% of the crowd, rooting you on, ready to go. Whereas today, no matter where Herbie and I walked, it was, you know, up the Rippers, let's go boys, let's get going. It's a sense of like energy, but it's also a sense of like of pressure as well, because you don't want to let them down. Not only are you going to let these guys down, but you're letting down the home crowd as well. So it's pretty special to be able to do it at home. It's hard work, but it's pretty special.
Well, Soph, that's been a pretty comprehensive overview of what's been an incredible event. We're looking forward to it going to Cooyonga. Obviously, we're going to see a vastly inferior crowd number because Cooyonga just doesn't have the scale to be able to cope with 30,000 people every day. So I suspect we're going to see something a little bit more like around the 13,000 to 15,000. It will still be amazing. The course is going to be wonderful to watch. We talked about greens being a bit short. I think Cooyonga is going to be a little bit short as well. That's the nature of men's professional golf these days. Anything else that caught your attention over the 4 days?
Well, look, all I'll say is the past events that I've been to LIV Golf, I often find that a lot of people were just coming for the concert. You can just see people streaming in as the golf is wrapping up and they're going straight to go watch Fisher or Dom Dollar, who was last year, or John Summit or Royal Otis, who was this year. But this year felt a bit different. It felt like a lot of the people were actually coming and still watching a bit of the golf. The crowd didn't all of a sudden just get massive towards the concert. Don't get me wrong. I think a lot of them still are just coming for the music and the vibes, but they are still going out and watching golf. I think it's a great promotion. I was out there with so many of my girlfriends who were starting to get into golf. It was great seeing them. They were asking questions. A lot of them were amazed when they started hitting balls from left to right, and I was explaining that's a cut. And they were saying, well, I can't even get the ball in the air, so how do you start to even begin to think about shaping it?
And by the way, they're hitting at 320 metres. Explain that to me as well, Soph.
Can you just start explaining everything? So, look, I loved it. I love being out with my girlfriends. It was great fun this year. It was a year focused for me a lot on spending time with my friends, introducing to them to the game of the golf, and they were all really interested in it as well. Don't get me wrong, I still went to the concerts and also had a great time. So, look, it was great fun. I think LIV's awesome. It's great for Adelaide. The crowds speak for themselves. Adelaide really shows up to the task, and it's clear that Australia have golf fans and we want to see golf.
So if in November last year, I was thinking that maybe the Australian Open had reclaimed the spot as the number one golf tournament in Australia. LIV Golf has re-established itself comfortably as the number one tournament. It had so much. I mean, I've talked my way through a couple of things that I would like to see it do to improve it even further. But this was just exceptional. Congratulations to everyone from the South Australian government through to the Grange Golf Club, through to the local team who is involved in delivering LIV. And then, of course, you know, the international product and the players. It was just superb, something that we all are going to take great pride in here in South Australia. And the fact that we have had such a engaging victor, the rags to riches story of, well, the richest to rags to riches story of Anthony Kim, will be something that I think will resonate here for a very long time. So that does wrap us up for tonight, but we've got an extraordinarily big week. Well, you have an extraordinarily big week because we are heading towards the opening of the South Australian Pennant Golf season. You are in charge of the Pennant Golf season opener on Tuesday night. Tell us a bit about that event.
Well, look, I wouldn't say I'm in charge. I'm definitely not in charge. I'm just the person with the microphone. So I guess I could make myself as much in charge as I want to be. But no, look, it's going to be a great event. I'm looking forward to it. It's the first time that Golf South Australia has ever put on this event. And I think it's great. I think it's showing what Pennant in South Australia is all about, giving it a bit more prestige, which is what it should have. I'm keen to see as many of the clubs out there out and supporting. I'm going to be doing some interviews and I'm really looking forward to it. It is a bit scary that I'm by myself with the mic, Hookie, but I might even give you a shout out, maybe, or maybe I'll just make it all about me.
I think everyone should be terrified when you're alone with the microphone, Soph, because if there's no possibility to answer back, everyone's probably going to cop a clip. I think that will be easy to imagine from there. Hey, gets underway Sunday, the tournament itself, 10 weeks. The women get underway a couple of weeks later. I think you start March 8th. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Soph? Yep. Just
so
March
the men
one
on
weekend.
February 22nd, the women on March 8th. We've already got some previews in the can. We've caught up with Michael Munn, the Simpson Cup Premiership captain from last year. We've spoken to Ross Steedman from the Grange Golf Club. Zoe Manton, the Premiership winning player and junior captain, I think she is known as at the Glenelg Golf Club. Of course, Glenelg doing the double last year. They'll come as defending champions this time around, and we'll be doing a whole lot more on Pennant Golf over the course of the next few weeks. I've managed to develop, so if you'll be pleased to know this, a list pretty much comprehensive. I've still got one or two clubs to go, but I've got pretty much the full list of Pennant contacts, so we'll be able to utilise them right throughout the Pennant season. We'll be doing some stuff for the Sunday Mail as well. We're hoping to get an article in the paper each week on South Australian Pennant Golf. So well done to you. Congratulations on getting the job on Tuesday night. You'll do an outstanding job. I'm looking forward to hearing all of the reports. I'll be back in Adelaide on Thursday. Our Pennant preview will drop Tuesday morning. Make sure you listen out for that. We'll probably try and get a bit more Pennant stuff done before the end of the week. All gets underway Sunday, and then I'm sure we'll have plenty more to talk about. Great to chat to you, mate. Hopefully I can get out of Wellington. I don't know if it'll be tomorrow as planned. It might be Tuesday. It might even be Wednesday. So it'll be a short stop in Queenstown. And then hopefully this weather does subside and we can get back to Adelaide. And looking forward to locking horns with you again when we start talking, well, Pennant Golf, but everything going on right around Australia and the globe.
Yeah, Hookie, as always, great. I do hope you stay safe over there. It sounds a bit dangerous, so stay safe. And I hope Molly and Sarah are also staying safe and you're staying indoors and well away from that Wellington wind.
Good on you, mate. We'll see you in a few days.
With the last putt sunk, that's a wrap on this golf edition of Hooked on Sport. Thanks for listening. Help us meet more golfers just like you by following us and leaving a review. Look forward to your company on the next golf edition of Hooked on Sport.